Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real.
You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. According to the National Committee for Responsive Philanthropy, they're a research group that studies philanthropy, and you know, basically if they're getting their the bang for the buck, they've come out with the idea that the education initiatives have thrown out there, they're not spilling over to the entire system, and the change isn't happening, and you know, the charter schools and all that stuff, not quite what they had advertised. Kind of interesting. Anyway, it is Teacher Appreciation Week. Here to talk a little bit about the big week and also the attacks that we see on teachers going on, our good friend Attorney Erwin Aronson. Erwin, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, it's Wednesday, Rick, and I'm glad to be here, so thank you.
Thank you. So it's Teacher Appreciation Week. Let's start off with, you know, hey, thank you to our teachers, right?
Well, it depends on where you are. If you're in the General Assembly of Pennsylvania or in any number of other state legislatures around the country or in the Congress of the United States, and you're appealing to the demagoguery, if you will, of political pandering, we apparently appreciate our teachers, the people into whom we entrust our most precious resource, our children. We're saying thank you to them this week during Teacher Appreciation Week by encouraging their employers to be able to fire them, dismiss them, demote them for any arbitrary reason at all, that we should subject them to political patronage, pay-to-play kind of games that we used to have before teachers were permitted to organize in states like Pennsylvania and have unions to represent them, so that I recall a day and time in my life when in Philadelphia and in Pittsburgh we had the old ward schools, where in order to get to be a teacher you had to be buddies with the ward leader and pay a price to get or keep your job. Since then we got sophisticated. We have collective bargaining. We have statutes in place that say that, in general, teachers who are tenured can't be fired for arbitrary reasons. Now, people seem to think that tenure means teachers cannot be ever terminated no matter what goes on. And that's, of course, not true, particularly not true in Philadelphia, that they continually cite as the example. In Philadelphia, if a teacher's evaluation is not adequate in 1 year, they have exactly 1 year to make it up and get up to speed, or they're out the door. And that's what tenure means in Philadelphia. But the Pennsylvania General Assembly this week announced to all of us that they don't want that to exist anymore. What they want instead is that school districts can pick and choose who they terminate without regard to things such as seniority. Indeed, make it illegal for a school district and the labor organization that represents that school district's employees to come to an agreement that says seniority, for example, will apply, or tenure will apply to the termination of teachers. You know, those people who we think are so important to our kids.
Yeah.
It's so we have a peculiar way these days, in legislative bodies at least, of demonstrating our appreciation for our teachers. But that's the negative side. There's a positive side. And the positive side is that teaching is, I believe, the single most important profession that anybody can take up. And it is so critical to our children, of course, but to our society, to our democracy. A wonderful teacher has touched every one of our lives, and we all recall those wonderful teachers with fondness. People who didn't just tell us 2 + 2 = 4, but who piqued our curiosity and our interest and our intellect and challenged us to think and do better and do more and to achieve with our minds and with our hands and with our hearts. in how we treat our communities. And we should all be celebrating that this week.
Yeah. But what the right wing will tell you is that should be enough. We shouldn't have to pay them. It's enough that they're doing this, and they should do it because they love it, right, Irwin?
Well, apparently that's it, but they are so deeply and offensively either ignorant of, maybe intentionally so, or ignoring the real sacrifice, the real dedication, the real commitment that teachers have in picking themselves up and engaging in this particular line of work every day. How easy is it for any of us to quell the energy and excitement when necessary of one or two kids in our household? Imagine that times a classroom of 35 or 40 tweens, 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, or 5 or 6-year-olds.
Yeah. Well, I see it every Thursday when I go into my son's third grade class to help out. And I think the teachers do an amazing job of just keeping them somewhat controlled. I've got 3 kids. I can't handle 3, let alone an entire classroom of, as you point out, very exuberant, very excited kids.
And of equal importance is it's that great teacher that every one of us has had, and so many of them in so many classrooms in so many communities are indeed great, that they not only have to channel that exuberance, but they have to hold that attention so those children actually get the message. This is a performance for several hours every day, 5 days a week, before having to go home and mark papers and create lesson plans and develop patterns that reach all of the kids. Because as everyone who has ever been in front of an audience knows, that in order to deliver a message, you first have to have the attention of the people who are the objects of that message. And our great teachers are doing that every day. And we have many, many wonderful people just like you who go in and help out in the classrooms. If teachers could get asked, I suspect, whether there's one gift that they would really appreciate, that gift would be time. Time to be with parents, time to devote to individual students, time to better develop those lesson plans, time to not only grade papers, but comment on them so that they could continue this exceptional encouragement that they offer up to our kids every day. The idea that we have legislative bodies or school boards, or we had a governor until only a few months ago that slashed and cut and burned our schools and did so by making our school teachers, our public school teachers, dedicated people into the enemy, into the devil, is just so fundamentally unacceptable and such an outrage that every citizen of this state and every citizen of the United States that has been exposed to this should be marching against the politicians who attack us this way, who insult and assault our public educators. And I would really love to see this week members of our General Assembly lining up in front of the school buildings in their communities and offering to help out a teacher to show teacher appreciation instead of coming to places like Harrisburg and putting up legislation to assault and attack our teachers one more time and to strip them of this basic thing that we all rely on, security in their jobs. Imagine what it must be like to face all that we know teachers face and to have the General Assembly saying, we want to strip you of your security and your work as well.
Yeah, I mean, the sad reality is I would love to do that with our legislators. You know, just one day, you haven't done it, you're out.
Yeah.
But I look at, the work that teachers do and what's happening to the profession. And really, it's an assault on teachers, yes, but it's an assault on the entire institution of education, on the way we educate our children. And I would argue it's done with a profit motive behind most of it.
I couldn't agree with you more. In the introduction to this segment of your show, you spoke about the national philanthropic organization analysis. And I read that, and one of the things that they focused on was the Walton Family Trust, the Walmart Trust.
Right.
And the Walmart Trust engages in a number of activities. They engage in some environmental activities, actually in a very positive way. and they adapt to the local situations. This report indicated, indeed, that the Walton Foundation focuses its activities locally on the needs of those local communities. But in education, they have one size fits all, and the size that they've announced that fits is to create charter schools and adopt taxpayer-funded vouchers for private schools, because that gets rid of government regulation, that gets rid of oversight, that gets rid of quality standards, and that gets rid of public sector education unions.
And really, and that is the goal.
And that is indeed the goal. That's just what I was going to say. So someplace out there, we need to recognize that when a legislator speaks of education reform, our antenna must go up. And when that thing that says reform is really an attack on our dedicated teachers, an attack that sounds like, for example, let's do away with tenure or let's do away with seniority as a consideration, what they're really saying is, because they have failed to adequately fund public education, because they have diverted taxpayer money that was dedicated to public education to wholly private business concerns and hedge fund managers that are trying to create a private industry funded by taxpayer funds that they call charter schools and vouchers, that when they are doing this, what they're really doing is saying that because we underfund and divert funds from public education, that we want to encourage school districts, instead of providing our children with a quality education, to dumb this whole thing down. And, oh, yeah, by the way, let's encourage the termination of the highest paid teachers who have the longest time and the most experience and the most broad-based and most diverse capacities. Let's get rid of them because they cost us more than the newly, freshly minted, inexperienced teacher that is learning her way or finding his way and is good and is dedicated but needs a mentor in that school of the more experienced, more well-seasoned teacher to be able to deal with these 40 kids in a classroom every 45 minutes throughout an entire day. And once that bell rings at 8 o'clock, there's not a break.
Let me ask you this, outside of the seniority issue, outside of, you know, having teachers who are more seasoned, who have been in the classroom for years, have probably seen everything there is to see, and have developed the ability to deal with, you know, virtually any problem or thing that pops up, outside of, you know, the experience level, how much of this do you think is getting rid of the older teachers, because they're the ones who are kind of pushing back against the new way of teaching, which seems everything is highly regimented down to the minute. At 10:15 we're going to do this, 11 o'clock we're going to do this, and basically turning the profession into factory work. How much of it is getting rid of them so that you can bring in this new way of doing things with the younger teachers who have been trained in that manner?
You just opened up an entire world. There is a great deal of that is the short answer. The longer answer is that this is not a new method. This is old wine in a new bottle. We used to do this way because we knew that one size fit all, and we knew that college wasn't for some kids, and we knew that some kids just weren't going to make it in school. And so we urged public educators to stay on a pair of railroad tracks that from which they could never deviate. We got better at this, and we got more effective at it, and teachers adapt. And that's why if you go into a classroom, whether it's in the Council Rock School District in Bucks County or Lower Marion, you know, some of the high-end school districts, very, very, very high-income school districts, or we go into an urban school in Harrisburg or in Philadelphia or in Pittsburgh or in Erie or in Allentown, we find teachers having kids working in smaller groups so that kids get to progress at their own pace and get to learn at their own pace. And, of course, the seasoned, experienced teachers are the ones who develop those modalities, who have refined them. And those are the folks who get pushed out when we do things like this game with seniority, because on the one hand, it saves the school district that's pushing them out the door more money than a younger, less experienced teacher. But on the other hand, of course, these are the people that have been at it for a while who have the security of their work with their seniority, with their tenure, that allows them to be treated less arbitrarily than would a younger teacher who has not yet earned tenure, who has not yet achieved a higher level of seniority, who has not yet become accustomed to utilizing his or her union as a buffer between an arbitrary school manager and what we know to be just and right and appropriate and proper, not for just the worker, not for just the teacher, but for the children in her charge.
Lots of things. Last question I've got for you, and the last thing I want to get into is I understand today in the Senate here in Harrisburg, they passed 644 and 645. And I guess this will probably just go right through the House and end up on the governor's desk. This basically just throwing the collective bargaining process into the arena of public opinion and making it really a huge political football and an opportunity for, I think, the right wing to really attack teachers even further. I'm curious your thoughts on this.
Well, I couldn't have said any better than you did. This is an underhanded, cynical, below-the-belt assault on the process, practice, and procedure of collective bargaining. We all know how collective bargaining works, those of us who are professionals in the field, and we know that if and when and how these things are exposed to grandstanding, they get to have grotesque political overtones. If some local agitator, some teabagger, some media outlet with a political agenda seizes upon a collective bargaining proposal that's been agreed upon tentatively by both a public employer and a union that is the exclusive representative of that employer's employees, and gets what these bills propose a few weeks to agitate about it, to whip things up. The politicians, the elected officials who are responsible for the ratification, who are often, most often, in fact, not at the bargaining table. They use professionals and negotiators for that purpose to very well represent them, will succumb to, that's the right-wing hope, succumb to political pressure and vote against the adoption of the very agreements to which their representatives have agreed and recommended, not because of any substantive reason, but for purely political reasons. But it's interesting to note that the legislators who are agitating for legislation that requires these kinds of steps before an agreed-upon collective bargaining agreement can be ratified, an agreed-upon contract can be ratified, have not suggested that any of the other multiplicity, millions and billions of dollars worth of contracts that they enter into with other vendors should be exposed to public scrutiny before they're adopted and ratified. I think it might be nice, for example, for people to be able to have the terms of a contract for trash hauling with Senator Scott Wagner's trash company, garbage pickup company, be exposed to scrutiny for 2 or 3 weeks before they vote on it and have an opportunity to learn exactly what the citizens of a community are going to be compelled to pay this purely private contractor with enforcement from the municipal government, no less, if they don't pay or don't pay his charges on time. That would be really pretty interesting. And I note that in these pieces of legislation, 644 and 645 in the Senate that you've mentioned, the Senate hasn't even proposed that kind of public scrutiny to the wages paid to workers would also be applicable to the contracts that they negotiate with vendors that are paid for exclusively by the taxpayers, or in many instances paid directly by the taxpayers in that community. So there's more to come on this.
Yeah, I mean, because some of the rhetoric that I'm hearing coming out would have done those, I'm guessing we're supposed to believe that that's in there. I mean, the rhetoric that I've heard around is going to open it up, and it wasn't just attacking unions. It was, you know, we want transparency for everything. But from what you're telling me, this really is only about screwing the workers.
Oh, that's it. This is only about screwing the workers, and by the way, screwing the public employers that want to do the right thing and negotiate a contract in good faith without the overlay and the cacophony of post-agreement agitation in the political arena.
Wow. I'm sure we will be taking this up in the coming weeks as this continues. Wow. Lastly, anything for teachers this week? Any message? I think Mike Crossey had the best one, so you're probably not going to be able to steal that one. A very simple thank you is what President Crossey had to say.
Well, I can't say anything more or more poignant than thank you. I am blessed by having been a product of public schools, public elementary schools, public junior high school, public high school, and public universities. And it was access to several great teachers and several great schools that got me from poverty to where I am blessed to be today. And if you are making it in any way in our society today in this country, thank a teacher.
There you go.
Thank a teacher.
Erwin, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Good to talk to you. See you next week.
All righty. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Yes, it is all about the children. Even after they're born. Rick Smith.